Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Look, it's bleak in Titan land. I'm not going to lie to you. It's been a rough season so far, and it's not going to get any better on Sunday. When the Titans visit the Buffalo Bills, they are 8.5-point underdogs. Ugh. And they are most likely going to be playing Will Levis at quarterback, although Will Levis, as you heard in Ian's update, was listed as questionable on the injury report. And I'm reminded by something that was kind of a draft argument, and then really an argument last year when Will Levis actually looked like a potential franchise quarterback. And that was the idea that Will Levis could be the next Josh Allen. Big, athletic, runs with the ball, can take on hits, cannon for an arm, can put it in certain places that other guys can't. Just that raw ability that gets coached up. Because Josh Allen was a 50% passer when he was at Wyoming. And it's not like he dominated at Wyoming. But the Buffalo Bills took him. Floyd Reese told me that when he watched the combine that year, that he watched Josh Allen throw, and it reminded him of Ryan Leaf. Not in the sense that Josh Allen would be a bust, but in the sense that Ryan Leaf could make a throw that would wow you and put you on your rear end, and then would throw a ball in the dirt. And that's what Josh Allen was doing. So again, this idea of could Will Levis be the next Josh Allen? Right now, that seems like quite the pipe dream. But Titan fans do love to hear pipe dreams. So I did a dive on the numbers. Just wondering, you know, when people say, well, Josh Allen was bad at the beginning, too. It's okay. Let's do a dive on the numbers. Let's take a look. Let's see what it says. Let's be honest, Titan Twitter. But let's do a dive on the numbers and see what we come up with ahead of Josh Allen playing Will Levis this weekend. And I was actually shocked by what I saw. What I did was I took Josh Allen's first two complete full seasons, which 28 games, and Will Levis's first two seasons so far, which 14 games, and kind of averaged everything out. Now, records-wise, it was not close. Josh Allen won 55% of his starts. Will Levis won 29% of his starts. So that is not even comparable. And even in Allen's first year, he made 11 starts and he went 5-6, which is still better than Levis. But how about this? Yards per attempt, Josh Allen 6.6. Will Levis 6.6. Yards per game, a number that seems to be going down, 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 down with Will Levis. Josh Allen, through his first 2 years in the NFL, 184.4. Will Levis, 179.1. Now, Josh Allen throws for 430 yards a game now. But in his first 2 years, it was 184.4, right there with Levis. Quarterback rating, Levis, 79.9. Allen, 78.2. Again, right there. Average touchdowns per season. Will Levis is averaging 16 touchdowns over 17 games. Josh Allen, 18 touchdowns. Interceptions, Levis 13 over 17 games. Allen, 13 over 17 games. Even the Pro Football Focus numbers are somewhat similar. In year one, Josh Allen had a big-time throw 4.9% of the time. Right now, Josh Allen, I believe, is leading the NFL at 7.9% big-time throws. But in year one, Josh Allen was 4.9. Will Levis in year one, 5.9, and both guys dropped in year two. In turnover-worthy plays, Levis in year one, 4.5, Josh Allen, 5.1. So the facts, the actual stats, tell a different story than the feeling that most of us have, including me, that would say, Josh Allen and Will Levis, are you crazy? But the stats actually say that through 2 years, this is what Josh Allen was. I even looked back and read an ESPN.com story from very early in 2021 during the playoffs, in which talked about the Josh Allen apology form. And it talked about all the people that over the first 2 years of his career had completely written Josh Allen off, from Pro Football Focus to Dan Orlovsky to Football Outsiders to everybody that had just said, this guy stinks. And I'm not going to lie to you. My kind of knowledge of Josh Allen before he broke out in 2020, my knowledge of Josh Allen was in 2018 they played the Titans and they won 13-12 in Buffalo in a game that Tennessee did everything they possibly could to lose. And in 2019 they played Buffalo at home in a game that Cairo Santos missed 4 field goals and the Titans did absolutely everything in their power to lose. And in neither game did I walk out of that and say to myself, Josh Allen is a dude. In fact, a lot of people thought Josh Allen was a bust. And there was a lot of talk. Hey, Baker Mayfield's rookie of the year. Josh Allen stinks. Hey, Lamar Jackson's MVP in year two. Josh Allen kind of stinks. Even Sam Darnold. People actually thought at the beginning of his Jets tenure that Sam Darnold was good. The same way that people right now at the beginning of his Titans tenure thought that Will Levis was good, and now they don't. And I kept reading about what happened when it came to the change that Josh Allen had from his first 2 years, 2018-2019, to his 2020 coming out party where they made it to the AFC title game and his real ascension into MVP status. But the truth is, with all these things, not one person can really put their finger on what it was. And this goes back to something Floyd told me years ago about evaluating quarterbacks. It's why Tom Brady ended up in the sixth round. He said, you can evaluate whatever you want about a quarterback. Arm strength, they've got metrics for that. Athleticism, size. But the one thing Floyd said they cannot measure is what's in your head and what's in your heart. And that was in reference to Brady. I think the same can be said about Brock Purdy. How did San Francisco find a franchise quarterback with the Mr. Irrelevant pick? What's in his head and what's in his heart? With Will Levis, that's really the question here. What's in his head and what's in his heart? Josh Allen had Brian Daboll coaching him. Maybe that was a part of it. I read one story about Josh Allen after he had turned the corner that referenced this kind of odd idea that the COVID pandemic allowed Josh Allen, who is from California, to spend an entire offseason, no OTAs, no training camp until very late, no trips with the guys, no weddings during the offseason, no, none of this stuff. And he spent the entire summer with Jordan Palmer, Carson Palmer's brother, spent the entire year going over the mechanical whatever, like this, there's some facility in California that takes where your weight is and where the ball is and worked on his mechanics and all of that. There was the fact that from year one to year two, they changed 9 of the 11 guys on offense around Josh Allen. In year three, they changed 1, Stephon Diggs. But this is where, again, feelings have to describe what happened, because the numbers won't tell you how Josh Allen took that leap. Will Levis is 25 years old. Josh Allen was 22 and 23. Maybe that's the difference. Maybe Josh Allen is smarter than Will Levis. Maybe Josh Allen is better coached than Will Levis. I can't tell you what the why is. Maybe it was the pandemic. Again, a lot of people had a lot of free time on their hands. What did Josh Allen do with his? I was reading in that Jordan Palmer article where he said this is going to be the only offseason where guys don't go on vacation three out of every four weekends, where there isn't somebody's wedding, there isn't a boys' trip to Cabo, there isn't, no, no, no. This is the only offseason where you really had to hunker down, stay at home, and work out outside. Maybe that was it for Josh Allen. I met Josh Allen at the Super Bowl, and I will tell you that he is a really not like put-together guy. I was going to say a really nice guy. He's nice, but that's not what he's just a put-together guy. Seems like a really good guy. Don't know him, but maybe that's part of it. Sat down with Will Levis at the Super Bowl and thought, man, this kid, he is wound so tight. I just want to be like, brother, it's okay. Just chill out a little. But I was kind of shocked. Because, again, the numbers tell a story, and the numbers tell the story that Josh Allen and Will Levis, very similar in their first two seasons. Make of that what you will. Some of you will get carried away with it. Some of you won't. But I was fascinated by it. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Plus, the one thing that I think is obvious and becomes more obvious with every game, we'll get to it next. Stillman & Company, Fireball Hot Take Friday. Chad Withrow usually joins us, by the way. He's on fall break this week. Chad Withrow's segment is presented by A Moment's Peace Salon and Day Spa. We do love them. We want to make sure we give A Moment's Peace Salon and Day Spa their love. Mwah! To A Moment's Peace. Stillman & Company, 1025 The Game.
When you think back on the rookie Will Levis that you watched coming in as a new coach, the guy you signed up to play with, do you see progress in second-year Will Levis so far?
Yeah, I think there's things that he's gotten better at. And I think there's things that he's going to continue to get better at. And there's things about, you know, what he did last year. It's, you know, it's just different circumstance, different everything. So it's hard for me to make comparisons to what he did last year, to what he did this year. I just know the things that I thought he needed to improve in. There's some things that he has done a lot better, and then there's things that he needs to continue to do better. So, you know, it's comparing and contrasting the last year and this year. Just the circumstances are totally different. Everything's different. So it's hard for me to make any real comparisons to that. But I do think that he's done some things better. He's been – the ball comes out quick right now, which is good. We need it to. You know, and I know he hasn't had the flash – some of those flash plays that came up last year. But, you know, that's not where we're at right now.
That's Brian Callahan talking about the difference between year one and year two with Will Levis. Ian, have you seen Will Levis do some things better in year two than year one?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so either. In fact, what's incredible is that his turnover-worthy plays, according to Pro Football Focus, his turnover-worthy plays are the exact same as last year. I think it's like 4.5% of his throws, of his dropbacks, are turnover-worthy plays. But last year, he had 16 big-time throws in 9 starts. This year, he has 2 in 5. You see the difference? And they both apparently came against the Jets. So the good stuff's gone, but the bad stuff is the same. Well, that's not working out for anybody. So while I did the dive on the numbers and was just shocked at how similar the first 2 years for Will Levis were statistically to the first 2 years of Josh Allen, the one thing that I am going to say in defense of Levis, and trust me, we bag on Levis plenty on this program, and you know it. But I believe in being fair. We talk about it all the time. Got to be fair. The one thing I will say is, it, in my opinion, is irrefutable. You know, like the video evidence you have to overturn a call? That sometimes they still overturn calls without having irrefutable evidence. It is irrefutable to me that Will Levis is a worse player this year than he was last year. Now, the reason for why, again, there's no way to know what the reason why is. I had TD on yesterday, and I said to TD, when TD was like, you know, you can't get too hard on the coaching staff. And I said, but TD, he's worse this year than he was last year. And TD said, I think he's overloaded. You know, he's got too much going on. Well, it's like I told Joe Rexroad and Jerry versus Joe a couple weeks ago. I said, I think the last coaching staff babied him, thinking that he needed to be babied along. And this coaching staff, because they probably have a stomach that thinks they can eat more than they really can, said, we can give him the whole playbook. And that's been a problem. But again, I'm not going to present to you these possibilities as to being the reasons why Will Levis is worse this year, other than to tell you that the one thing that I know for certain is he's worse this year than he was last year. And I don't give a rat's ass about Brian Callahan saying, well, his completion percentage is up. The next time I hear Brian Callahan say that, we're going to spend an hour ripping on Brian Callahan. Because it's a gaslight to the nth degree. Congratulations, you checked it down to the back. What'd that get you? He's averaging like 4 yards per throw. That's awful. So don't give me this. Last year he was 7.1 or 7.2 in terms of yards per attempt. 7 is kind of the line of demarcation in the NFL. He's in the 6s this year. That's awful. So don't give me this. His completion percentage is better. I mean, hey, his completion percentage is better. He threw the ball to Tony Pollard on the second play of the game last week. But then the OC gets up there and basically throws him under the bus and says, well, that play was supposed to go to Calvin Ridley and it didn't. Well, but he's working on his completion percentage because that's the only thing the coach cares about. So I've had enough of that. In almost every other possible category, Will Levis is worse. And it's not even really all that close. Last year, his QBR was 33. And by the way, that's considered to be heinous. His QBR is 27 this year. His big-time throws are down 5.9% last year. So 6% of his throws last year were big-time throws. This year, 1.2. And the volume of turnovers, way up. So when addressing the reasons why, that is all an opinion. That is subjective. But I think it is objective to say he's worse this year. No matter what Brian Callahan says, he is worse this year. So now's where I'm going to throw my opinion into the ring here. I think maybe this whole idea that the Titans coaching staff got hired for, this, we want to throw the ball, maybe that was a little premature. I've been dogging the Titans for not showing any interest or desire to retain Derrick Henry. But the other part of not keeping Derrick Henry is that it probably raised the expectations for the young quarterback before it was time to raise those expectations. If Derrick Henry was the quarterback, there's no identity with this football team right now. None. And they can lie all they want and talk about, make up something, but there is no identity. They thought coming into the year, and Blake Bedingfield wrote this at paulkarski.com, they thought going into the year that they were going to be a pass-first team. Remember the video that everyone got all excited about? Brian Callahan, when he was OC of the Bengals, said the team that throws the ball the best in the league usually wins the game. Well, that's great, but you don't have Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow on this team. And Derrick Henry won a lot of games running for this football team. But when Derrick was here, there was an identity. And it was Derrick. It was power. It was the big boy. This year, they wanted it to be the three receivers, Ridley, Boyd, and Hopkins. But they don't do enough of anything, and they're not good enough to get the ball to those guys to make it an identity. So Brian Callahan can downplay the difference between last year and this year all he wants and say, well, you know, last year was asking different stuff. This year, his completion percentage is higher, but last year was a – but it's a valid question. Why has he gotten worse since you've come in here when, again, the reason you were hired was because of him? And this is not to take any blame or, you know, question whether or not Will Levis is part of the problem? Levis is absolutely culpable for why this team stinks. But I think it would be unfair to not look at this and ask, well, maybe Brian Callahan hasn't been doing a good job with the young quarterback. Because again, other than completion percentage, which is a meaningless stat in this case, when you ask the guy to throw the ball 1 yard behind the line of scrimmage every play and then chastise him for not throwing it behind the line of scrimmage, everything's worse. And there can be tons of reasons why. But the fact is the fact. The reasons are all opinion. It's hard not to look at Brian Callahan and say, what part of this is on you, bro? 615-737-1025. A lot of your phones to get to on this, so we'll get to some of those next. Stillman and Company, 1025 The Game.
Coach Callahan earlier about the highs and lows adversity quarterbacks face all throughout a season, and you've been very open with us about where your mind's been at in certain weeks after certain games. Where's your confidence level at right now at this point in the season and following that tough loss Sunday?
Hi. I feel like it's always been that. I think after the game I made the comment, I found myself in a tough spot after the Miami game, just dealing with the injury and all that. And I was disappointed how I let myself dip for that brief period of time. But I feel like I'm back, and I'm not going to let myself lose that again. I think the second you lose that edge, it's hard to come back from. And you got to just maintain that to go out there and have the confidence and my mindset to just do what you're capable of. So that's what I'm making sure that I remind myself every day, regardless of what my box score or stat line looks like, that I know who I am at the end of the day. Numbers or whatever else, whoever anyone says has to say, doesn't define me.
That is such a weird cut where it's like, hey, Will, how do you make sure that you still have the confidence going forward? And he's like, yeah, I said after the Miami game that I was losing my confidence a little bit, and I'm never going to let that happen again. So the one game that they won was the one game that he started to question his confidence a little bit because he didn't play. But all the other games, like, your confidence wasn't hurt at all after the Green Bay game? Like, after the Green Bay game, you weren't sitting there thinking, holy crap, we suck, I threw a pick six, Malik came in here, absolutely lit the house on fire, and I kind of stink. Because that's what most people thought. And I also, again, Will Levis, the way he uses the word confidence. You know, I said this yesterday. I think Will Levis might just be stupid. Like, I think he might just be a dope. Now, this one guy in the YouTube chat is like, he has a master's in finance, Jared. And it's like, I don't care. He might just be stupid. The way he uses the word confidence, this isn't the first time that we've had a discussion about this. He said, we came together as a team and said, we're going to be confident even if we lose 100-0 or whatever it was. That's not confidence. That's positivity. There is a difference between the two. You make a choice to be positive. Hey, I know my girlfriend left me and took my kids and all of my money, but this gives me the opportunity now to go set out and be me and find somebody who wants to be with me. That's positivity. That's not confidence. Confidence is not something that can be manufactured. Confidence is not something you can fake, and confidence is, quite frankly, not something that you can control. I'm a pretty confident radio host. Why? Because I've done it for a decade. That's why. You know what's funny? I'm going to talk about the way that they measure radio here, and there are certain things you're not allowed to say, certain things you aren't, whatever it may be. So, there was a point in my life where, if you know anything about how radio ratings work, it's a really weird system. It's screwed up. But I've never used that excuse. It's the scoreboard that people signed up to play by, and I certainly have agreed to it as well. But every radio host I've ever met who doesn't get ratings always says something along the lines of, well, the system screwed up. Don't blame me. I know people are listening to my show. Don't blame me. The system screwed up, and so I know it's fake. But again, that's just either making an excuse or trying to be positive. The truth for me was I mean, I used to think that when I wasn't doing well, and now that we are doing incredibly, I still have the same confidence because I know I can do it. But there's something that is to be said for the fact that we've gone and done it. And that's something that, again, like, I know you guys could say, Jared, you suck. Okay. I mean, check the scoreboard. And so when I hear Will Levis talk about confidence all the time, I'm like, I don't think you really know what that word means, dude. Like, confidence is not this manufactured, I believe in myself. That's positivity. Confidence is, hey, I know I can do that. Vanderbilt beat Alabama. And I said, let's do a two-hour show right then and there, right after Vanderbilt's post game's off the air. Let's do it. No preparation. No all day sitting there figuring, okay, here's what we're going to do with the show today. We're just going to do it. Because I know I can do it. And there's a difference. Joe Burrow is confident. You know, Jordan Rogers years ago told me at SEC Media Days, the year that Burrow won the Heisman, that Burrow and he, I would say, had a little bad blood, but that he got to the Manning Passing Academy that year and Burrow was just furious with him. And he went to Jake Fromm and asked, why is Joe Burrow mad at me? And he was like, oh, yeah, apparently you said something on some broadcast about him and he didn't like it. So at SEC Media Days, they talked it out or whatever. But Jordan told me, he was like, let me tell you something. Joe Burrow, he thinks he's the man. Well, Joe is the man. So make of that what you will. Steve is up next here. Our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Steve's been waiting patiently. Steve, go ahead.
Hey, thanks. Hey, once again, man, hey, great show, man. I think they're mad because you're not 100% right. I think they're mad because you're 99.5% right. But this is my point right here. Rand is blowing smoke, and it's obvious, and I'm not calling for his job. But it's amazing how we always be in a position where it's somebody to point a finger at the end of the season, and we keep getting the same results. We always let playmakers go, a.k.a. A.J. Brown, Derrick Henry, and I'm going to say it, Tannehill. We need a quarterback. We don't have an offensive line, but we got a Will Levis and no offensive line. And you told him forever about a right tackle. How about a right guard? How about, you know, all that stuff, man. Look, keep doing what you're doing. Because it's like what you say, hey, if I go to work and don't perform, you get fired. I'm not trying to hear the labor pains. Show me the baby. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate your call, Steve. And I'll say this, you know, I was reading Blake Bedingfield, the former Titans scouting director, the one that convinced them to draft Derrick Henry. I was reading Blake's column previewing the Titans and the Bills game at paulkarski.com, and Blake was talking about Dalton Kincaid, the tight end for Buffalo. And Blake said that he wanted the Titans to draft Dalton Kincaid in the first round over drafting Peter Skoronski, which right now seems like a no-brainer, right? Ian, if you had to pick, you're on the clock, and it's Dalton Kincaid or Peter Skoronski, who are you picking?
I mean, Kincaid's been okay, but he has not been worth the 11th overall pick, I don't think, either.
Yeah, but Peter hadn't been worth, like, the 60th overall pick.
So,
but again, it goes. He was talking about the fact that, hey, the Titans need a tight end. They need a guy that can get out there that can. And I feel that way about the right tackle position. Like, I feel like I'm sitting here and I'm thinking to myself, guys, you need a right tackle. And they threw every excuse in the book to explain why they didn't get one. And it's like, no. Like, no, there's no excuse other than you screwed up. And so anything that isn't the Titans screwed up, whether it was Bill Callahan, Brian Callahan, Rand Carthon, or Chad Brinker, whoever it was, you know, it was all four of them, in my opinion, that didn't go out and get a right tackle. I mean, that is, again, to me, it questions the ability of this front office to do anything right. I mean, it's as simple as that for me. Skoronski with the 11th, but Skoronski's awful. And again, not a premium position. And that's something that I know. I mean, I would take Dalton Kincaid over Peter Skoronski and wouldn't even think twice. To your point, Ian, I'm not sure that, you know, the 11th overall pick.
I mean, Kincaid's fine. I think he's a solid player, but, I mean, he's underwhelmed a little bit so far this year. I mean, they traded away Diggs, and I think they were hoping Kincaid would step up. He hasn't really done much. I mean, he's a solid player, but I don't know about 11.
I'll say this about Dalton Kincaid. I don't think Dalton Kincaid is Brock Bowers. And I think Brock Bowers is that kind of player. Hey, and I'm not saying that, you know, I would have taken Bowers over Latham. I'm just telling you. Like, I'd have Bowers over Latham, and there'd be some rookie second rounder starting at left tackle who wouldn't be as good as J.C. Latham. But I would have taken Brock Bowers because I think Bowers is that kind of a player. Like, I think Bowers is a potential superstar. And you need that, in my opinion, at tight end with a young quarterback. You know, again, Andrews, Kelsey, Laporta, Kittle, you know, all the great tight ends around the league on some of these good teams. One texter says, if Levis is actually hurt instead of them wanting to play Rudolph, then that's disqualifying for Levis because in order to be the franchise quarterback, you have to be available, and it would prove once again that he is injury prone. I can't disagree with that. He was injured his last year at Kentucky. He was injured on three separate occasions last year, and he's now been injured once this year. But you almost have to consider it twice because he was off the injury report, and now he's back on the injury report, and it kind of feels like a little bit of a Treylon Burks loser's cramp. I mean, I guess Treylon Burks hurt his knee in practice, but and might have to go on IR, but Treylon Burks, I mean, he caught the ball the other day, got tackled, and immediately got up and limped off the field. So I don't – yeah, that guy, his bones must be made of brittle. Like, it's just – One deck says, I think Levis overperformed last year and he's regressed back to who he really was this year. I don't know if I believe that, but it's hard to argue it right now given the fact that he looks terrible. One texter says, the one thing I will give Levis as far as his improvement is concerned is he did slide last week. Improvement from year one to year two. Yeah, he slid once. But he's also hurt right now because in the first quarter, he dove trying to get a first down on third down, went again. If you're a starting quarterback worth keeping, that's not when you make those dives. If you're a starting quarterback, who's worth keeping? In my opinion. One texter into the text line says, I believe I am in the right plane with Levis. I believe I'm in the right place with Levis. Knowing what the Titans are going to do with him, let him have the season. I knew Josh Allen and shared a lot of similarities with Will Levis. We are too impatient of a franchise. Is Amy really about to do the right thing? Take the proper steps to develop a raw young quarterback? Looks like it. With that said, his similarity in stats with Josh Allen doesn't mean he will succeed or turn out just like Josh Allen. Just means to sit back in your chair and let's see if he can claw his way through his own head and become an 11-13 win a year quarterback. Yeah, no. 11-13 wins a year. I don't think that'll ever happen for Will Levis. And I'm just, again, trying to be honest. Gordon says, I would not point to Skoronski as your example because I think it was a better idea than most. Everything else they did the last 4 years. Only because the bar was so low. We had zero starting linemen, so we took a shot and we missed. But at least we didn't take a terrible wide receiver with that pick. What? So what about trading back? You could have traded back from 11 and still gotten your guard. Skoronski is not good, and he's not worth the 11th pick. And this idea that, you know, I wouldn't use Skoronski as an example because it could be a whole lot worse. I'm like, I mean, you took a guard with 11 who is probably a below-average pass blocker. That is horrendous drafting. Like, horrendous. And I get in these fights with Corey Curtis all the time, because a lot of people just look at first round pick and think it's the same, and think that the 11th pick is the same, that Skoronski is the same as Caleb Farley, but the value of those picks are not the same. The pick, the 21st pick, does not have the value the 11th pick has. Look at the charts; it's massive pick to pick. And that's why Skoronski is, I think, an exceedingly bad example of overdrafting, or is a good example of overdrafting, because, again, at 11, he's nowhere near that value, which is so high in the NFL. Six-pack picks are next, 102.5 The Game. Stillman & Company, six-pack picks. Ian, I think we stunk up the joint last week, but I'm not disappointed with it.
2-4.
What did I tell you about the Vanderbilt game?
You, yep.
I said I wanted to be wrong, and I was. And what did I say about the Oregon game?
Also the same. You wanted to be wrong, and you were.
I wanted to be wrong, and I was.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been 4-2. Let's go right into it this week.
All right. Fancy new college football music.
I hate it.
We will start, of course, 2:30 on ABC. Number 7, Alabama at number 11, Tennessee. The over-under on this game is 56.5. Bama is -3.
I have no idea what's going to happen in this game. I do not trust Bama, and I do not trust UT. I think both teams are overrated. I think both teams have serious flaws. And I'm going to take Alabama, and I'm going to take them because of Jalen Milroe. I actually, you know, Kalen DeBoer's won all these games as coach, but Kalen DeBoer looks like he's a little in over his head at Alabama, given the high expectations. Josh Heupel's probably the better coach, given the fact that, you know, he's kind of broken in like a baseball mitt at UT. But Nico just is not throwing the ball, and Jalen Milroe is. Alabama is in bad shape for Alabama. Tennessee should be better. I'll take Alabama. No conviction behind it, but I'll take Alabama simply because of Milroe.
Okay, we continue on ABC to the 6:30 night game.
Big one.
Number 5, Georgia at number 1, Texas.
Over. I will take, well, go ahead.
Okay, would you like to know the spread, or does it matter?
Isn't it 3?
I have Texas -4.5.
Texas! I will take Texas. And I said this on the college football preview show, that we always do that Friday before college football starts, and I had Texas going undefeated in the regular season. And I had my friends that graduated from A&M, and they were all mad at me, and I just kept saying, guys, I'm telling you right now, I'm taking Texas to go all the way this year in the regular season in the SEC, have Oregon winning the title, feel better about it after last week. Give me Texas. They beat Georgia, and they really, truly, you know, plant their flag in the number one pick, or the number one spot.
Okay, we'll move on to the NFL. Some good games in the NFL. It was hard to choose our slate this week. We will start noon on CBS on Sunday, of course. The 5-1 Texans are headed to Green Bay to take on the 4-2 Packers. Over under a 48.5. Green Bay is -2.5.
I'll take the Packers. I think that Houston always wears the wrong cleats when they go to Green Bay. Starting to get cold. And there's something about Houston I don't like, and I can't put my finger on it. I'll take the Packers.
Okay. Good early Fox game as well. An NFC North battle. The 4-1 Lions at the 5-0 Vikings. Noon on Fox. 50.5 for the over-under. We got Minnesota -1.5.
I can't believe Minnesota's favorite. I'll take Minnesota. I think that the best thing in the world happened to the Minnesota Vikings when the Detroit Lions went to Dallas and won by 100. Because you want that team you're about to play to be fat and happy. And that is what Detroit is. Give me Sammy D. Give me Minnesota. I'll take the Vikings.
Okay, and then the late afternoon game on Fox at 3:25, the 5-0 Chiefs at the 3-3 49ers, over under a 46.5, San Francisco -2.
I will take Kansas City. Why is San Francisco favored? San Francisco's got all kinds of problems, you know, injury-wise. I will take Kansas City. I think this is a game where Mahomes just gets it done in the end. Mahomes really does, you know, put it to San Francisco. I'll take Kansas City.
And I guess we kind of already know your selection on this, but the 1-4...
Well, it's a big spread.
That's true. Noon on CBS. 1-4 Titans at the 4-2 Bills. 40.5 of the over-under. Low. Bills minus... I got 8.5.
I am taking Buffalo, and I am also taking the over. And I think the Bills are going to hit it themselves. I think this is going to be a blowout. I think the Titans' heads have been in all of the wrong places this week, whether it's DeAndre Hopkins and the trade deadline, whether it's Calvin Ridley and his targets, whether it's Will Levis and his own made-up confidence. I don't think they've been focused on Buffalo. I think they're starting to throw in the towel. They already had a bad day of practice this week. Buffalo 44, Tennessee 6. I think it is a blowout. And, boy, we'll have a lot to talk about Monday at 2 o'clock. Meanwhile, the award-winning pregame show Sunday at 9:30, live from Twin Peaks, and Jake and TD are next.